Hello, everyone, and welcome to part two of our Advent series on Christmas According to John by Daryl Johnson. In this episode, Daryl explains how these opening verses of the Gospel of John both set the stage for what is to come through the life of Christ and draw us step by step more deeply into an even greater sense of wonder at the miracle of the Incarnation. The proclamation of John is that Jesus is, in fact, the life and the light of the world. And Daryl presses into Jesus's claim that because we have seen him, we have seen God. And because we have seen Jesus, we have seen humanity, who we are, who we're supposed to be, and who, by God's grace, we can become.
The more I live in the grand opening to the Gospel of John, the grander it becomes. What a text. If CBC were to interview me about the meaning of the season, I would ask to simply read this text slowly. Simple enough vocabulary, relatively easy to comprehend words, stitched together to draw us step by step ever more deeply into ever more profound wonder. The text takes us into the heart of the story we have to tell the world. The text takes us into the heart of the story of how the world is being made new. As I long to read the opening section of the Gospel of John on CBC or in any other public space, I'm keenly aware of how audacious the text sounds in our time. I'm acutely aware of how presumptuous it sounds in a post-Enlightenment, post-modern, post-Christian context. Even as I spoke the words this morning in this space, on this corner, in this world-class city, I can feel that the words which cause my heart to soar are experienced by others alternately as foolish and offensive. But then, so is the whole story into which this text takes us. So are most of the words spoken in the story. This is my body given for you. This cup is the new covenant in my blood shed for you. I take great comfort in the fact that when John first penned the opening lines of his gospel, many in his time experienced them as foolish and offensive. But slowly, the words began to do their work. Slowly, the words began their transforming work. And slowly, the world began to change. John chapter 1, verses 1 to 18, has traditionally been called the prologue. Very appropriate title. The prologue. Pro, before, loge, word. The word before the word. Before John tells us the story of Jesus of Nazareth, he speaks a word before the word so that we will read the rest of the story correctly, so that we will know who this Jesus is. But as we suggested last Sunday, a better title for the text is The Overture. Functioning like an overture to a musical or an opera. Not merely setting the stage for what is to come, but actually taking us on to the stage. Not merely opening the curtain, but actually drawing us through the curtain. Playing the keynotes of the pieces to come, awakening us to major movements and themes. And as an overture to a musical or opera is not fully appreciated until you hear the whole work, so John's overture is not fully appreciated until we hear the whole work. It's when we go on to read the rest of John 1 and John 2 and John 3 and all the way through John 21 that this overture finally really lives in us. Now, what makes overture an appropriate title for the opening lines of John's gospel is the way John has composed the lines. He works with what is called staircase parallelism. A word prominent in one line is taken up in the next, connected with another word, which then is taken up in the next line. I tried to show this in the way I had the text printed for you in your bulletin. So verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. It's clearer in verses 4 and 5. In Him was life, and the life was the light of humankind, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not comprehend it. John has crafted this text as a poem. I think he might have been crafting it as a hymn, the music of which, when sung in the world, begins to transform the world. Now, as you can see and hear, one of the dominant notes sung in the overture is the good news that light has come. The light has come. 6 times in the overture, John speaks of light. The story of Jesus is the story of the coming of true light, which is why so many of our Christmas carols sing about light. Have you ever noticed that? Break forth, O beauteous heavenly light, and usher in the morning, the night of darkness ending. O come, thou dayspring, come and cheer our spirits by thine advent here. Disperse the gloomy clouds of night, and death's dark shadows put to flight. Silent night, holy night, Son of God, love's pure light, radiant beams from thy holy face with the dawn of redeeming grace. The coming of the Word into the world is the coming of the light. Now, in order to more fully appreciate this good news, we need to see and hear it in the flow of the overture. So, let us review what John develops before he sings the good news that light shines in the darkness. In the beginning. That is where the Jesus story begins. Not at his resurrection, not at his crucifixion on a Roman cross, not in his preaching and healing ministry, not in his baptism, not in his birth in Bethlehem, not even in his conception in the womb of the Virgin. The story begins way, way, way back in the beginning. Indeed, before the beginning. For as John says, in the beginning was. In the beginning, someone already was. Someone already was. He was already in the beginning. He already always was. There was never a time when he was not. In the beginning was the Word, the Logos, God's speech, God's self-revelation, God's self-expression. Long before the beginning, the self-expression already was, for it is the nature of the living God to express God's self. Long before anything came into being, the Logos was, the speech was, the self-revelation was, the self-expression was. There was never a time when God was not expressing God's self. And the Word, the Logos, was with God. As I pointed out last Sunday, it's literally toward God. In face-to-face, intimate communion, God's self with God's self-expression. God's self toward God's self-expression. In fellowship, in community, in fullness, in joy, not lonely, not needy. And the Word was God. Was God. Of course. How could it be otherwise? Only God can be the manifestation of God. Only God can be the revelation of God. The eternal God reveals himself, and that self-revelation is himself. The living God manifests himself, and that self-manifestation is himself. The personal God expresses himself, and that personal expression is a person, God himself. The Word was God. Now, all that we've said thus far is embedded in the word only begotten. You probably heard that. Twice in the overture, John refers to only begotten. Verse 14, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, glory as of the only begotten of the Father. And then verse 18, no one has seen God at any time. The only begotten God, who is in the bosom of the Father, he has explained him. Now, what is John wanting us to know in using the term begotten and only begotten? It is C.S. Lewis, the brilliant thinker of the 20th century, who helps me understand this best. In one of his radio talks on BBC, he pointed out that although we use the words beget and create interchangeably, there is all the difference in the world between beget and create. To create is to bring into being something other than yourself. To beget is to bring into being something like yourself. When you create what is different than yourself. It expresses something of you, but it is not you. But when you beget, what you beget is the same as yourself. What you beget is, so to speak, an extension of you. Beavers both create and beget. They create dams. They beget little beavers. Humans both create and beget. We create machines and houses and cars and computers, but we beget little human beings. God both creates and begets. God creates sun and moon and stars and earth and human beings, God's crowning work of creation, in whom God takes great delight. It is very good, but we are not God. Even the crowning work of God's creation is not God. God creates, and what God creates is not God. But what God begets is God. God begets God. From all eternity, God has begotten the Logos, the only begotten God, the eternally begotten Son of the Father. All things came into being by him. The only begotten God creates everything else. All things. Out of this eternal, intimate fullness and joy, the Logos speaks the universe into being. Everything that has life and breath owes its existence to the Logos, to him who became flesh, to Jesus, the eternally begotten Son of the Father, begotten in time in the womb of the Virgin. And in him was life, says John. But of course, what else could John say as the overture unfolds? In him who is the author of life, there is life. Now, here I simply have to do a little vocabulary study with you, one I've done on many other occasions. The word that John uses, which is translated life, is the Greek word zoe. Many parents in our time are naming their children Zoe. Our youngest granddaughter's named Zoe. In him, in the Logos, in the self-expression, was life, zoe. Not bios, the normal word for life. And this is critical to know as the rest of the story unfolds. In the Logos was zoe. The Logos creates bios. But what's in the Logos is zoe. Now, here's the point of this little vocabulary lesson. There is a big difference between zoe and bios. A huge difference. The words come into the English language in words like biology and zoology. But there's a big difference between biology and zoology, right? We take a huge leap when we move from the biological level of reality to the zoological level of reality, right? The leap is even huger when we move from bios to zoe. You see, bios is created life. Life that has a beginning and life that has an ending. It's a good life. But it is life that is finite and therefore life that decays and eventually dies. And we all know bios life. We all know its wonder. And we all know its finitude. From dust to dust, ashes to ashes. Zoe, on the other hand, is uncreated life. It is infinite life. Zoe has no beginning and it has no ending. Life that does not decay and die because it is life that cannot decay and die. Zoe is the infinite life that the infinite God has and is. So, when someone asks you, when did life begin? You have to answer with a question. What kind of life are you referring to? Bios life? It began when the Logos spoke it into being. Zoe life? Never had a beginning and will have no ending. In him was life. In him was Zoe. And when the Logos came to earth as one of us, when he became flesh, when he took up the bios life, he makes the great claim, I am the life. I am the Zoe, uncreated, eternal, indestructible life, and I give it to you. I give you Zoe. So John writes in the little letter we call 1 John, the one who has the Son has life. The one who does not have the Son does not have life. The one who has the Son has the Zoe. The one who does not have the Son does not have the Zoe. Now, this is why Jesus can make that promise he does for relative to the death of his disciples. John 11, 25 to 26. I read it at every memorial service that I do. I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me shall live, even if they die. And those who live and believe in me shall never die. Never die. Why? Because those who live in him who is the Zoe have Zoe, and therefore do not die even if they go to the grave. Those who only have bios life do die, because bios life dies, but not Zoe life. Even if bios dies, we who have Zoe do not die. Zoe cannot die. Now, what does all this have to do with the coming of the light? John 1, 4. In him was life, and the light, life, was the light of humankind. The Zoe is light. Of course. By its very nature, Zoe is light. Zoe oozes light. Like the sun radiating light energy, Zoe himself radiates light. The life is light. So, when he takes on our flesh, he can make the other great claim that changes everything. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life, the light of Zoe. The light that gives life, light that is life. He was coming into the world, says John. John 1, 9. There was the true light coming into the world. True. The word means genuine, as in genuine article or the real deal. The true light was coming into the world. Amazing news. into the world, into the cosmos, says John. Yes, into our material space-time world, which the Logos made, but also into the world which we humans made, cosmos. As I pointed out before in the writings of John, cosmos means human society organizing itself without God. Cosmos. Human society organizing itself without the life. Human society intentionally organizing itself without the light. He, the Logos, who is life and light, was coming into the cosmos, coming into the world that does not want the light. Amazing grace. Amazing grace. The Logos, who is life and light, comes into the world that ignores him, and which as a natural consequence is dark and decaying, to give the world that ignores him life and light. This makes John 3:16 all the more stunning. For God so loved the world. God so loved the cosmos. God so loved human society, organizing itself without God, that he gave his only begotten Son. That is, he gave himself, for what God begets is God. That whoever believes in him should not perish, because that's what cosmos does when it rejects God, when it turns against the light, should not perish, but have everlasting life, everlasting Zoe. The true light coming into the world. Coming. I think John is referring to this long, long process of coming in the events like the burning bush and the giving of the law from Mount Sinai and all the words of the prophets. Enlightening everyone, says John, making it possible for us humans to do the good that in fact we do. Making it possible to do science and medicine and law and architecture. Impossible without the Logos enlightening us. Making it possible to do teaching and farming and parenting. Coming, enlightening all, culminating in the light coming in person, moving into the neighborhood and piercing the darkness with the light of life. I am the light of the cosmos. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Light that is life. Life that is light. Become flesh, dwell among us, in our cosmos, making it his home. How fortunate John was. Because John actually got to see the light in the flesh. So did James and Matthew and Peter and Mary and Joseph and Mary Magdalene. They actually saw the light face to face. But we are not yet able to see this light face to face. One day we will. One day we're going to see him face to face, and oh, what a day that's going to be. But right now, we might not be able to see the light himself. But because the light has come, we can see everything else in light of the light. Because the light has come, everything else is put into perspective. How do you know the sun is shining right now? Because you can see the sun? Can you see the sun right now? Come on. No. How do you know it's shining? Because you can see everything else. So, because the light has come and continues to come, we can know who God is. We can know God as God really is. The Logos, the light, has made him known. No one has seen God at any time, says John. The only begotten God who is in the bosom of the Father, he has explained him. The invisible God has become visible. God has put on a face, Jesus of Nazareth, the face of the invisible God. Show us the Father, Philip asked Jesus. Have I been with you so long, and you do not know me? Jesus responds. He who has seen me has seen the Father. The living God, who the Apostle Paul says dwells in unapproachable light, has stepped out of the light as the light, that we might know who he is and what he is like. He comes to us as Jesus. He is just like Jesus. The Father is just like Jesus. Just as kind as Jesus, just as merciful as Jesus, just as generous as Jesus. Because the light has come and continues to come, we can know who we are. We can know who and what it means to be a human. We do not have to be confused about our humanity. Jesus is who we were meant to be and who by grace we will become. What Jesus said in reference to knowing the Father, I think he can say in reference to knowing humanity. They who have seen me have seen humanity. In the face of Jesus, we see God. In the face of Jesus, we see humanity. Yes, when we look into his face, we see how far we have fallen from what he originally created us to be. But we also see who he has come into the world to remake us to be. 1928, Christian leaders from around the world met for 15 days on the Mount of Olives. People like William Temple before he became the Archbishop of Canterbury. 15 days on the Mount of Olives. Boy, would I have loved to have been there. At the end of the conference, they issued this simple statement. Our message is Jesus Christ. He is the revelation of what God is and what man, through him, may become. Pretty simple. Our message is Jesus Christ. He is the revelation of what God is and what man through him may become. It's what the church has been declaring right from the beginning. Jesus of Nazareth is true God and true human, fully God, fully human. In him we know who God is and what God is like, and in him we know who we are and what we're to be like. Because the light has come and continues to come, we can now know how to live in the cosmos. The light of life has shown us in our flesh what life is all about. He lives the life he designed us to live. The Logos has come to teach us how to live logically. In his Sermon on the Mount, he shows us that life is all about relationship. He shows us how to live in relationship with the Father. He shows us how to live in relationship with one another. He shows us how to live in relationship with those we call friends. He shows us how to live in relationship with those we experience as enemies. He shows us how to deal with anger and lust. He shows us how to deal with this urge to retaliate and take revenge, living it out before our eyes in his trial and on the cross. He shows us how to love. He shows us how to pray. He shows us how to trust. He takes hold of our desires and by grace redirects them to desire God and the kingdom and righteousness of God. Jesus, the true human, shows us how to live truly human lives. Because the light has come and continues to come, we now know why the world goes dark. The world, the cosmos, does not receive the light. He came to his own, says John, and those who were his own, and mark this, by the way, every human being is his own. All things came into being by him. And those who were his own did not receive him. And as a result, chose the darkness and the ways of darkness. Oh, it's not as though the cosmos woke up one day and says, you know what? We ought to choose the darkness. Rather, in not receiving the light, the natural consequence is to enter into the darkness. Some observers of history are saying that in these early years of the 21st century, we are moving into the new dark ages. Not totally so by grace of God, but darker than it was 20 years ago, darker than it was 40 years ago, darker than it was 60 years ago. If the celebration of gratuitous violence, if the exploitation of human bodies, if gross injustice, if the seeking of revenge, if widespread addiction, if such phenomena are the measures of darkness, then this is a dark age. Why? If the light has come, why is it still dark? Not receive him. The light has come and is shining everywhere, as surely as the sun is shining everywhere, but everywhere he is not yet received. And so the darkness remains. Which brings us to the affirmation in the overture to which I have now clung for decades, not only for the cosmos, but for myself. Because the light has come and continues to come, darkness will never have the last word. John 1:5. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. The darkness did not comprehend it. The darkness did not master it. The word John uses, katalambano, literally means to seize. To seize from above all the way to below, or to pounce on, to overtake from above to below. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not seize it. The darkness did not overtake it. The darkness did not overcome it. The light came, and the darkness did not overcome it. It tried, and still tries. In Bethlehem, as soon as Jesus is born into the darkness, Herod the Great, who is threatened to the core, seeks to snuff out the light, but it did not work because it cannot work. Darkness can never finally overcome the light. At the cross, it looked like darkness had, that it had pounced on the light and put it out once and for all, but it had not, because on Easter morning, the light of the cosmos emerges from the darkness of the cosmos and declares, "Do not be afraid. I was dead, but look, I'm alive forevermore, and I have the keys." You know the saying, it does little good to curse the darkness. One ought to light a candle. The overture sings that the candle has been lit. The candle. The candle of candles has been lit. And no form of darkness, be it political or philosophical or economic or spiritual or emotional, no form of darkness will finally overcome it. The light is the Logos. Who or what can overcome the Logos? The light is the Zoe. Who or what can overcome the Zoe? O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in thy dark streets shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. In him was life. The life was the light. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not overcome it. Sing it, John. Sing it, church. Go tell it on the mountains, over the hills, and everywhere. The darkness does not overcome the light. This is why, in the middle of the 4th century, the church decided to celebrate Christmas on December 25th. At that time, December 25th was the feast of the sun god. On the 25th, following the winter solstice, Romans celebrated Sol Invictus, the unconquerable sun, S-U-N. And as a way to preach the gospel, the church co-opted December 25th to celebrate the birthday of the unconquerable sun, S-O-N. So, brothers and sisters, people of the light, come to the table set by the Logos, who is the life and the light. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. The light sets his table in the midst of all the darkness, because nothing finally overcomes him.